I'm proud of these guys, you know, to do what we've done and put nine new faces together and go out and fight and compete like this. It doesn't feel good after a loss. But I think after some time and you get to reflect a little bit, we'll see that we move the needle in a positive direction. So just proud of my guys, proud of their fight.
Go on a Sunday. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, the radio home of the Vegas Golden Knights here in the Valley. I'm Brian Feldman. Sitting to my right on your radio dial, Missy Lynn. On my left, I've got Jose, who is working the camera and working the big board, producer extraordinaire, future Hall of Famer, and man, friend of a lot of the Vegas Golden Knights, man. One of the best hockey interviewers in Nevada right now. Whoever thought Mags a couple years ago, I'd say that, brother. But Magnum, the producer, is back here as well.
Yo.
Right? I mean, that's
You flatter me up. I mean, look.
You didn't know crap about hockey 2 years ago.
I didn't.
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
people learn. That's what happens.
Well, no. I knew a little bit, but I wouldn't say that I was, like, hardcore, you know. But
You know as much about hockey as I know about soccer, okay?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Okay, there we go.
But I don't know what you know about soccer. But what I do know is that I'm going to be torn this week. You know, a lot of guys have gone through it, but, you know, with where their favorite teams have come into town. And, you know, you went through it with the Red Wings, a team you grew up watching as a kid. And, you know, they came to town in October. And Frank, you know, big Blackhawks fan, his team came to town twice. And Clayton was a Blue Jackets fan. And Ryan, the Kings fan, and me, well, I grew up rooting for the Devils, and they come to town on Wednesday night. And
Mags, none of us have ever experienced anything like this.
No,
this is by far, I mean, this is the flipping Twilight Zone when it comes to sports right now. This is absolutely amazing.
But, you know, I have been told by the other guys who've been through this that it's okay. Like you realize that at one point that you're a lot closer to these guys, and you know, you're around them every day. So even though technically we're not supposed to cheer, They tell me it won't be hard to not root for your team. So
there's nothing more personal than when you kind of get to know the players internally. We're cheering for them, man. That's the coolest thing about this gig, is you get to know them as individuals, not as athletes, and you can't help but pull for guys you know.
Yeah,
I think that is natural. That's human nature. Well, listen, our social media handles, Out of Line, 1340 AM, at Out of Line, 1340 AM is the Twitter handle. You can definitely follow us there. The Facebook page, like it, follow it. It's Out of Line. That's spelled OUTTALINE. Real easy to find on Facebook. We're also Facebook Live, Missy Lynn's page, Brian Feldman's page, Jose Volonte's page. Right? I got that right.
Everywhere.
You got it right.
Okay, man. I work on these things. I try to improve, and that's what happens. But also, listen, without you guys, there's no show. So anytime, not that we'll take your phone call, not that Magnum will let you get through, but just in case you do have the inkling, you have the itch to give us a call, 702-876-1340 is the studio line.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. Again, we talked about all the people in studio today. Hey, UNLV got their 20th win in a play-in game of the 2018 Mountain West Conference Tournament before going down to that school, you know, that won up north in the quarter, I think it was the quarterfinals, right? Second round, if you want to call it that, the play-in game. There seems to be an unwarranted arrogance around the UNLV brand right now. Ed Graney of the Las Vegas Review-Journal and co-host of the Press Box on our sister station, ESPN Radio Las Vegas, wrote an article about it, and in just a few couple minutes, Bernie Fratto, host of Rebel Minute on ESPN Las Vegas, will join us to talk about it. Today is Selection Sunday, and Emily Van Buskirk, lead college football and basketball writer for the sportsfanjournal.com and host of the bi-weekly podcast Sideline Sass. She'll be here joining us as well. She's actually in spring training down in Scottsdale, covering some stuff down there. She'll be here to talk basketball today. We'll be talking baseball down the road in the future. Matter of fact, that's all we're going to be talking about in the summer. So right now it is March Madness, and that is on everybody's mind. Interviews with UNLV's Jr., Shakur Justin. Will he be back? You'll hear about that. Also, I got a chance yesterday. It was so cool to talk to New Mexico head coach Paul Weir. You're going to hear that interview. I really like this guy. I think we're going to see him at a Power 5 program in the not-so-distant future. Gonzaga coach Mark Few, I got a chance to meet and talk to him on Tuesday night. That was really cool as well.
Awesome.
He's a great guy, man. One of the elite coaches in college basketball, what he's done with the Gonzaga program. And, of course, Nightcap talks about the Knights getting ready to wrap up their 5-game road trip tomorrow afternoon. The best and worst part about this show is, again, you can check us out on Facebook and see us in the morning. Sometimes that's good, sometimes not so good. Again, go to Missy Lynn's page, my page, the Out of Line page, and Jose Volonte's page, and chime in if you would like. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubba's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubba's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. For more information, go to bubbasuniversity.com. Joining the show now, good friend, host of the Rebel Minute, which you hear on ESPN throughout the week through the basketball season. Bernie, UNLV is done for the year, 20 games in, and I don't want to talk about any of that. I want to talk about Ed Graney's article. I'm sure you saw it the other night, and I thought it couldn't have been more accurate.
Referring to, Brian, he's written several.
The article about the arrogance of UNLV when evaluating its basketball program.
Yeah, what Ed was alluding to there is that the decision had been made not to accept a bid to go to the RPI, or excuse me, the CBI, I'm sorry, if in fact an invitation would have been forthcoming. And I think Ed hit a lot of key points, and I talked about it with him on his show Tuesday, and that is simply this. Ed believes the decision was made because there's this delusion of grandeur in the UNLV program, Brian, that this is just simply beneath them. And I don't agree with that. I think fans actually would have liked to see the Rebels go to the CBI. If in fact, they even got an invitation, they probably would have. They're a 21 team. And would have liked to see postseason play continue. And the truth of the matter, Marvin Menzies is telling the truth, that this team is in building mode and that they move the needle forward. See, the beauty of it is you got several players coming back. Justin comes back, Clyburn comes back, Amori Hardy comes back. You got Jay Green, Terrell Beck. There's talk now of even possibly Brandon McCoy coming back. So you've got a core of 7-8 players that you can build from in the next year and get some additional practices. One of the, I think, talking points about this whole subject matter is what's the real reason? They try to pass it off as money. That's baloney. And even though you'll tender the $40,000 or $50,000 fee, the Rebels would keep the proceeds for a home game. So it's my long-winded way, Brian, of saying that I think Ed made a lot of good points, and I think it's something that's not sitting well with UNLV fan base, the fact that they would arrogantly deny or turn down a CBI invitation before it was even tendered.
Hey, Bernie, I disagree with you a bit on Menzies, the way he presented it. To me, sitting there in that press conference, it did come across as arrogance. It really did. Just the way he said...
Well, what do you disagree with me on? Because I'm agreeing that they're arrogant.
No, but even Coach Menzies, I mean, the program, I thought you basically said that Ed had some good points, but for the most part, it wasn't accurate.
No, I didn't say that at all. You need to re-listen to what I just said.
I do. I must.
I'm in total agreement. Let's set the record straight.
Please do.
I'm in complete agreement with
Ed.
We talked about it Tuesday. Anybody can hear our archived conversation. That Ed is exactly right. And frankly, I even answered as a fan. The fan of me said, "Yes, I would like to see the Rebels go to the CBI. And if the Rebels don't go, I'm really not sure the reason why Ed's position was arrogance. That's good enough for me. What the Rebels tried to do was pass it off
as
multiple other excuses. So, again, for the record, I agree with Ed.
This was, by the way, what Marvin Menzies said when he was asked the question why he wouldn't go or consider another postseason tournament besides, obviously, the NCAA tournament or the NIT.
You have so many young guys. Why, in your mind, would you not play another tournament if you were offered a bid in the next few days? Other than the NIT, or obviously the NCAA tournament.
Well, it's a decision that's made by a lot of people. It's not, hey, I want to go play in this. It's a collective decision. So, I would have to, you know, we would have to sit with my administration and my bosses and decide. You know, I don't particularly have to be candid, I don't have a zeal to play in those tournaments for a host of reasons. But just depends on, like you said, on your team and the youth of your team and different scenarios. There's finances involved. There's a lot of things involved to whether you want to play in those, the state of mind of your guys, your seniors. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So it's never just a cut and dry deal, you know. But as of right now, I don't believe that that's our intention.
A zeal to play in those.
Hey,
what,
Brian?
Talk to me. A zeal to play in those.
Well, props to you for capturing that soundbite. It's very appropriate. Good stuff. It makes for good radio, Brian. Look, it's a collective conversation, but if anybody doesn't think Marvin Menzies could make a unilateral decision and say, I want to go to this tournament, they'd come up with the money, and I believe they'd support him. He doesn't want to go. And that was a weak answer. We call that equivocating. You kind of bounced all around, and then you honed in, Brian, right on the sweet spot, which, well, I don't have a zeal. Translation, I don't want to go. End of story.
Bernie, the whole season with Menzies, the beginning of the year when they were winning, he would come into the press conference tardy, in his mind tardy, and say, hey, guys, sorry for keeping you waiting. And again, as a person, Marvin Menzies has been nothing but kind to me. He's come on the show. Yeah. I'm not trying to rip on the guy, but all of a sudden when they're losing, it's a much more humble Marvin Menzies that comes into the press conference. That is very bothersome to me. Stay consistent, man, right?
Well, I think Marvin Menzies has a real nice spirit about him. He's a nice guy. People have to understand. I've been doing this a long time, and I spent 10 years at CBS Radio in a major market, so I've seen it all. We're not personalizing this when it comes to Marvin Menzies in any way. This has nothing to do with Marvin Menzies, the person. He's hired to do a job, and that's win games and get the Rebels back into prominence, have success in conference play, have success in the conference tournament, maybe even get our name called on, Rebels get their name called on Selection Sunday. Dave Rice was 94-45 and went to two tournaments. That wasn't good enough for people. They fired the poor guy midseason. Big mistake. So here's what you got. You got a guy who says this is his dream job. He says he's building the program. Now let's look at the glass half full. They went from 11 wins to 20 wins. Granted, a lot of those wins were against our sisters of uncontrollable flatulence. Big damn deal. It killed them in the end. They had a Ken Pom non-conference schedule strength of like 320. But let's look at the glasses half full. He's got a lot of players coming back. They did go from 11 to 20 wins. Now let's see what they can do next year. They're going to have to formulate a better schedule. I hope they still can backfill some teams in. And what they really need to do is get to what makes Mountain West Conference teams successful. Look at San Diego State. A four-year starter at guard, Trey Kell, a senior leader, 28 points. You put them on his back. You know, Brian, San Diego State was 22-10 this year. They were 22-3 when games Trey Kell played. So the moral of the story is, when you add Malik Pope and Shrigley, et cetera, you put a lineup on the floor of guys who played 60, 80, 90, 100 college basketball games. If the Rebels can put a roster like that on the floor next year and the year after, where they take the floor and say the 2019-20, 2020-21 season, and they've got three or four third-year juniors and a senior, and a point guard that's a leader, and all of a sudden you got a roster composition and a starting lineup that's played 7,500 games, they have a chance to have success in the Mountain West Conference, and that's where Coach Menzies needs to get, in my view.
I've been saying it for a long time so far, the last couple months anyways, don't draft McDonald's All-Americans. Give me five-year players, four-year players, the transfer guys. And you pointed out exactly San Diego State. They started a little bit slow. They had a change, obviously, a changing of the guard. But Brian Dutcher has been with Steve Fisher forever. And they just had, I think what he said, I asked him in the press conference what took them so long to start clicking defensively, because they were without question the hottest team in the Mountain West coming into the tournament and still have not lost a game. I think, eight straight wins now. And he said it was nine straight wins. He said it was a matter of Malik Pope really was the difference of getting and taking his role as a leadership role on the defensive end of the court. And the main thing is these guys, the length, they're just so hard to play against. They're so hard to get inside on. And I loved what San Diego State did this year.
Yeah, Brian, and think of how you just described that. This is a program, an organization, a culture, a team with an identity. And I think the world of Brian Dutcher, and I'm biased because I remember when he was at Michigan, he was alongside Steve Fisher on the bench for the Fab Five, alongside Steve Fisher on the bench in 89 when they won the national championship. He's a good man, and he knows what he's doing. And I said all along I thought San Diego State was better than their record. But let's backpedal. What is the identity of the Rebels? Who are they? The way you just described San Diego State with their link and commitment to defense, how do we define the Rebels? You know, the famous actress Lily Tomlin once said, "I always wanted to be somebody. I just wish I'd been more specific." Who are the Rebels? Who do they want to be? Who are they going to be? And I really think this is, back to Graney's article, I really think this is a missed opportunity for the Rebels to not to go to the CBI, assuming they would have gotten a bid, to have a chance.
Bernie, where do you see yourself? Where do you see them going in the next like two seasons?
Well, I don't know, home dinner, maybe a show. What do you mean where they're going?
Well, I mean, as far as what you're saying, you know, with the team, it's definitely going to be a different organization as of next season. So, where do you see them going? And with the coach, I mean, with Menzie and the way he's performing, where do you see them taking? We know it that.
Are you asking me if I think they're going to fire Marvin Menzie?
I could ask that too, yeah. Do you think Menzie's going to be going, and after that, where is the team going to be leading next year? Are we going to do better next season?
Well, there's kind of three questions here. The first one is, I think Menzie's is safe. He'll be back next year. And I think you have to take these things one year at a time. The future's not promised to anybody, but I do believe Menzie's will be back next year. The reason it's tough to answer that question is now I'm hearing that there's rumblings. I don't know if they're true. Randy McCoy might come back. That would be positive, I think. So if McCoy comes back, you might have one answer. McCoy doesn't come back, might have another answer. You do lose your backcourt of Jordy and Jovan, and that was very productive. How do they replace those two? Does Amori Hardy step in as the point guard, or does the incoming freshman step in? We don't know if there'll be some late additions to the class and how the new class will meld with the old class. And the other thing we don't know is what the schedule is going to be next year. And so when I know all those things, I have a better answer for you. But what I would say is this, Missy, that at this point, I have no reason to believe there'll be any improvement next year.
Yeah, I don't think so either, Bernie. And, you know, the one where you and I had spoken, and you are a believer, as I am more so now, that Shakur Justin will return next year. He would have to sit out. He would have to sit out a year. Well, a lot of people, you know, the bottom line is, Bernie, you know his phone's going to start ringing. I mean, he has definitely played himself into the radar of college basketball D1 coaches, and I got to believe he's going to be getting some interest in people that are going to poke at him and say, hey, do you want to stay at UNLV or do you want to come to a Power 5 team?
That's entirely possible. I like Shakur Justin. I thought he had an excellent year, and he seems like a good guy. He finished up strongly on Thursday at 14 points, 12 rebounds. He hasn't graduated, so he wouldn't be a graduate transfer. So if he did transfer, Brian, as you know, he'd have to sit out a year.
Right.
Would that be worth it to him? He's got a role here at UNLV, clearly. He's a key cog. He'll definitely start and get quality minutes. And I think you asked him, you know, that in the press conference, and I think at this point you have to take the kid at his word that he is coming back. So I guess, you know, you just have to watch that, I guess.
We'll see next year. We'll see well before next year. But I've got an interview. I spoke with Shakur Justin, and I'll play that in a minute. He's Bernie Fratto. Bernie, I appreciate you joining the show. It is going to be interesting what UNLV will become next season. Again, there are a lot of interesting things that are going to transpire between now and then. One thing that isn't going to change, and I agree with you, is Marvin Menzies, but I do believe next year at this time, if we're having any kind of a similar conversation, Marvin Menzies will definitely be on the hot seat going forward.
Yeah, I think you guys asked some good, tough questions, and you've raised some very good talking points, because people feel unsettled about this season, and I think part of the reason now is the expectations are starting to return. And so even though it might sound good on the face of it, well, they go from 11 wins to 20 wins, based on your questions, which are good questions, you feel like, wait a minute, this feels incomplete. People shouldn't be satisfied. Yeah, you'll take the progress. So the real question is, you know, was this season really progress or not? And I think you're both a little, not trusting of that, and I get that.
No, there's no way I'm going to say this season is progress. What you see is you see improvement in teams with progress. Look at what New Mexico did.
Yes,
look what San Diego did. If anything, UNLV regressed. Their last great game was against Utah in November. I mean, this team has done nothing but regress. We see them come out in the second half not as good as they played in the first half in many cases. And to me, that is regression. That is a coaching issue. And again, I'm not going to say that the jury's decided on Marvin Menzies. I'm going to say we need to see an improvement in some sort next year. I do agree, if McCoy doesn't come back, this team will not be as good next year as it is this year. So it will require a better coaching job.
So spot on, Brian. I got a question for you because you were at all the press conferences. How many times did Coach Menzies say this team will be playing its best basketball around tournament time? That's when we'll be, we'll peak. We'll get rid of our blemishes. And by the way, they went 1-6 down the stretch. We talked about this, that those last five conference games were individual playoff games for the right to not have to play on Wednesday. Same for New Mexico, they came through. Same for Wyoming, they came through. Same for San Diego State, they came through. None of them had to play on Wednesday. The Rebels did. But again, Brian, finish with that. How many times did you hear Coach Menzies say they'll be playing their best basketball at the end?
He's Bernie Fratto, and I will finish with that. He said it a number of times, Bernie. Marvin Menzies, I won't say he talked out of both sides of his mouth, but we heard that a great deal on how they would be playing their best ball at this time. They weren't, there's no question. Yeah. I saw a regression throughout the course of the season. I did not see a guy like Brandon McCoy get better. It's amazing watching the Pac-12 tournament last night and seeing how much better DeAndre Ayton has gotten over the course the season. He was a beast when he came into the Thomas and Mack, and I didn't see anywhere close to that improvement in Brandon McCoy. I don't see the conditioning that I see in other teams, and I think a lot of those things we're going to have to see improvement on next year. Menzies is going to have to change his style or something. Bernie, appreciate you joining the show. Again, Bernie Fratto, Rebel Minute. You got one more Rebel Minute, Bernie, going on this week?
Yeah, I recorded it Friday morning, so it's out there. Hey, thanks for having me, and have a good show.
You do the same.
Have a great day.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, as I mentioned, going to break, I want you to hear what I talked to Shakur Justin about. Shakur Justin's one of those guys, as Bernie mentioned, he did not graduate. He would have to sit out a year if he transfers to another school. I really like this kid. I think he was the most valuable player on the UNLV Running Rebels this season, and I think he will be a huge part of next season if he chooses to stay. I take him at his word, but again, Brian Shapiro had a good point saying that, he hasn't started getting the phone calls yet. Wait till the calls start coming saying, hey, Shakur, why don't you come over here? Maybe Lon Kruger calls him and says, come to Oklahoma. I don't know who will call. I just know he will get the calls and he'll have a decision.
Though.
I hope not. He loves it here. He likes Marvin Menzies a great deal from what he told me. And again, this was talking to Shakur Justin. This was after UNLV lost to Reno.
Shakur, season's over with, man. I'll start off just a few feelings right now.
No one likes losing, so I mean, a lot of people in this world know how I feel. Just feel like we had it, feel like we did a lot of good things. You know, we made some mistakes, but I feel like we capitalized on a lot of good things tonight. As much as I want to hang my head, I just can't. I know that we gave it our all. We played hard, and oh my gosh, it's just, I got to be the tough one for everybody. I can't come up here and media and start crying, and I just got to stay a warrior for my fellas because that's how the way we played tonight.
How much did yesterday's game, an emotional win to go to overtime and win that, were you guys feeling that at all towards the end of the game today? I mean, that was a really emotional game, and of course, Reno's rested.
We had a tough game yesterday, which put a lot of pressure on our legs and our body for the next game, but honestly, none of us actually really cared. We knew we was going to come out and play with the fire and play with the energy and, just don't even think about fatigue. We was just going to play until we pass out, if possible. So that last night was just, it was spirited that we collectively as a team was just concentrating on this game ahead today and came out here. I don't think any of us was tired at all. I think it's just I know Reno made some good plays and made some big shots, and that's pretty much what it is.
How much did it change your guys' game plan with the guards being in trouble? Of course, Jordy picking up those two quick fouls to start the second half, and then midway through, you got Jovan with four on you. Does that change things when you got both of your guys in the backcourt with four fouls on them?
It's a little, you got to be a little conscientious this time. You can't just go and attack. You got to be conserving of your, like, your fouls, because you're in foul trouble. So, even if they both have four fouls, I would still have 100% trust in them. If they was guarding somebody full court, half court, anything, I believe they're great defenders and even great leaders. So, nothing changed. It's just basketball.
Got to ask you, what changed this season? You guys started, you came out like a house on fire this year. The non-conference schedule, really talking about competing with anybody in the country. What do you think personally in your mind changed?
I'm not going to say anything changed. We're still seeing people from the non-conference. I believe people probably scouted us. They seen that we was a threat, so they probably extra scouted us, which I probably applaud them for. I just feel like they just knew what we did and knew what we do. Sometimes it didn't. The scout of them probably didn't work. Sometimes it did work, but I still believe even right now we can play with anyone in America. I got the faith in my team, faith in my coaches. So this year wasn't as successful as we wanted to be, but I feel as though we played hard and we played that one, and the coaches were great.
You personally, how much did you grow this year? You transfer over here this year, D1 school, UNLV, a great history to the school. How much did this season personally help you, and how much did you grow?
I got a lot of things to work on in the summer, which starts probably tomorrow. I can't have the same feeling next year. So the transition from Division One, from junior college to Division One, most junior college people have problems. Some are adapted. I was 50-50. I adapted with like energy and stuff, but it's just more smart and more intelligent, like parts to it. You just gotta pay attention to a lot of details. It's just a lot of stuff that goes into it that I promise that I'll be, 100% better on next year.
Now, just real quickly, fast forward into next year, two more questions for you. One, yourself, you've definitely created some opportunities for you. There's no question that probably every team in the country knows who Shakur Houston is right now. How about your future? You definitely got another year of eligibility. Is it going to be here at UNLV?
Yes. I'm not thinking about the next level right now. That's what made me a decent junior college player. I didn't think about Division One when I was at junior college. I just thought about junior college. So while I'm here, just got to focus on Division One, UNLV, and bringing back the legacy that we have. And I'm all in. I'll be here next year for sure.
Final question, Coach Menzies. Two things. What has he meant to you, and him as a coach? How do you feel as him as a coach? And again, what has he meant to Shakur Houston?
First off, he's just like a father figure. He's just he's like the man of the house. He says all the right things. He knows all the right things. Knowledge is always valuable when it's coming out of his mouth. So I just applaud him on even recruiting me, because they came in pretty late, but I didn't want to disrespect anyone. I was open to all opportunities, so I didn't make no regrets. I don't have any regrets choosing him as a head coach and as a school. He's just a good guy all around. I wouldn't trade any coach in the world for this guy. He knows how to talk to his players. He knows how to get into his players' head without disrespecting them or anything. So that's just what I like. I like a coach that's a people's person instead of like worrying about only basketball. You got a coach that worries about you and basketball, then you got a great guy.
End of the season now. The tournament's over with. But if I would have told you at the start of the season you're going to lose a real close game to San Diego State in the championship game of the Mountain West Conference Tournament, what would you have said to me?
You know what? To be quite honest with you, I wouldn't have been surprised. I felt really good about our team through spring and summer and even into the fall. When our season started, there was obviously some adversity. We struggled. If you told me that through November, December, January, I would have told you you were crazy. And fortunately enough, our guys really rallied, bought into all the things we were saying, and we were able to turn our season around and finish it in a great way. You have to tip your cap to San Diego State. I thought we played well tonight. It wasn't perfect, but well. But San Diego State just played terrific, and they really deserve to win.
What brought you to this point?
Culture, more than anything else. I think our guys just buying into being a team, being unselfish, and closing the gap on teams like San Diego State that just have an amazing array of talent and ability. And we were able to kind of shrink the gaps on those teams and make up for things with just really hard work, unselfishness, sharing the ball, and just being a great team. So it took us as far as it could. I wish it would have got us, whatever it is, 6 or 7 more points, but unfortunately it just didn't go that way.
You put a ton of emphasis on defense and a ton of emphasis on conditioning. Mm-hmm. How much did that play a role in the success of this team this year?
Very much so. I thought really, particularly down February and March, I think that's part of the reason San Diego State's been successful. I think we were both the fresher teams. Neither of us have been playing somebody 38, 40 minutes a night all year long. And I think some of the teams that did that, it showed up a little bit this tournament. But I think for San Diego State in particular and for us, we were the two freshest teams. And they had some guys that, you know, that within their depth of their team just played really well tonight.
How does it make you feel when you see guys like Joe and Antono sitting up there with the reaction that they have and what Joe said about you at the end of the game tonight?
We have a very close-knit group of guys. And we've all really bonded together. We went through a lot. We care about each other very deeply. And it was a very emotional locker room, and I'm sure we'll continue to be for the next few days.
Finally, I know it just ended, but if you guys get a chance to play, to continue to play on, and what you're saying about these guys, chance for the seniors to play one more time, what would you say?
You know what? I wish it was a simple answer. It's not. There's financial considerations. I have my AD to talk to. There's a lot of different things to kind of go through for postseason, and we'll sort that out maybe over the next few days.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is why. This is why I'm hot.
Yeah, Blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. 2 happy hours every day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports during football season. Down there every Monday night, hosting Monday Night Football. And yeah, you just heard Paul Ware. Mags, you and I went to just about every game of the Mountain West Conference Tournament and got a chance to observe New Mexico and their first-year head coach, Paul Ware. I think we definitely understand why he was voted Mountain West Coach of the Year. And this guy, Chris, what did you think? I mean, how impressed were you with Paul Ware?
I think he is, right now, I think he's the best coach in the conference. There's not one player, not one team that got, or not one coach who got more out of what he was given than this guy. He essentially took over what UNLV was last year and mass exodus of players. And New Mexico was in a lot worse shape from Craig Neal than UNLV was from Dave Rice. I mean, Dave Rice, you know, I mean, he let me think about how I'm going to say that. There was a mass exodus from UNLV, and the cupboard was definitely empty when Menzies took over. But it was similar to what Paul Ware took over at New Mexico. And I guess the players that had stuck around in New Mexico, they weren't quite nearly as good as the players who stuck around for UNLV. You know, the guy did an amazing job with essentially nothing. You know, he's got some good players. The Australian kid who I think you said is from Sudan originally.
Yeah, Makuch Maluk, I think, is the way you pronounce his name.
He's
a freshman, and the kid is unbelievable. For a freshman to have the kind of savviness that he has on a basketball court as a freshman is unbelievable, Chris.
But,
it really
is. You know, what really stood out to me was the admiration his players had for him.
Oh, my goodness.
Those kids would run through I hate the proverbial, you know,
Cliche.
Yeah. They'd run through a brick wall for that guy, but those kids, you could clearly tell. Listen, when a coach is sitting there telling Jeff Grammer of the Albuquerque, I think it's Journal, the main newspaper in New Mexico, when he's telling this writer that my guys are running sprints the morning of
the championship game because they gave up 5 offensive rebounds.
Yeah, and they ran in the semifinals before the Utah State game. Because they gave up more rebounds to Wyoming than they wanted to. There's definitely a feel of this guy is going to do big things. And as a UNLV guy, as a UNLV alum, as a UNLV fan, I hate the fact that this guy is now going to be in the Mountain West Conference. And, you know, I want a big team to come in right now and scoop him away, because if they don't, New Mexico is going to be basically, the way I see it happening right now, Reno, San Diego State, and New Mexico are really going to separate themselves from the rest of the conference. Leon Rice at Boise State, good coach, but the guy's a perpetual underachiever when it matters most. And then he whined that, you know, well, he overachieved in the regular season. Listen, that may work in Boise. That wouldn't work in Albuquerque. That would not work in San Diego. That would not work in Vegas. But these three schools are going to separate themselves. And UNLV needs to figure out fast how they're going to keep up with these three schools, because these are going to be going forward. Listen, Reno, hate them as much as you want. They are essentially bringing everything back next year. They've got a lot of guys transfer or sitting out this year because of transfer rules. Musselman is a good coach. Dutcher clearly is a good coach at San Diego State. He'll be able to recruit. I mean, look, he recruited for Fisher for a long time. They still got Justin Hudson on their bench as well, who's a good recruiter and a very good defensive coach. And New Mexico's got Paul Weir, who is, as we saw this weekend, like I said, I think he's the best coach in the conference right now.
You know something, what I loved about Paul Weir is, how about the philosophy, their motto and their mentality, believe or leave. I love that. His players live by it. He says, look, I don't care who you are. You either believe in what I got here or leave. And he proved it. He suspended a couple guys midseason when they were shorthanded already. They welcomed those guys back into the team. I mean, Sam Logwood, where would they be without this guy if he wouldn't have had him for this tournament right now? And also Simon, the other guy.
Troy Simons.
Simons. I mean, the same thing. This guy was also awesome, and they wouldn't have done well without him either. But the key is the conditioning of this New Mexico team is second to none, and that's why they hung in this tournament. That's why they are playing their best ball at this point in the season, and I really hope they get an invitation to the NIT or accept an invitation to the CBI, because I think they will represent the Mountain West in a very good way, and it all starts with Paul Weir. Again, man, believe or leave. Remember that motto, because this guy is doing big things. And one more thing, Mags, you should see the recruits he's bringing into New Mexico and the transfers next year. This is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And one other school you didn't mention, don't forget about Utah State. Sam Merrill and McEwen are two of the best combination players in the Mountain West tournament. Sam Merrill did nothing but impress me every time he took the court. This is like having a coach on the basketball on the floor at Utah State, another team that's going to give UNLV fits. I don't know what Menzies is going to do to poke a nose in front next year, but he's got a tall order in front of him.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Sam Merrill, because to me, and I'm going to tie this in here. To me, Sam Merrill is everything that's wrong with UNLV. Because Sam Merrill is a kid who, after watching him a couple nights in the Mountain West Conference tournament and seeing what he could do against good competition, he single-handedly beat Boise, and he really kept Utah State in the game against New Mexico. This is the number 2 and 3 seed in the conference, but he's everything that's wrong with UNLV, because they would never recruit a guy like that. First of all, he didn't have enough stars next to his name coming out of high school, because he played in Bountiful, Utah. Nobody cares because he played in Bountiful, Utah. He didn't have enough stars, and he looks like he could be cast as Leave It to Beaver. You know, he literally looks like...
No, he looks like... We talked about it. He could be playing the tuba in the band.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like a member of the band.
And what a hell of a player that kid is.
You know, he's an extension of the coach on the floor, Duria. You know, you could tell the coach, he's only a sophomore. He has all the confidence and faith in the world in this kid. Look, I mean, they're going to be good. I don't know how good they are with just those two players, but they're going to be two players to watch going forward.
It's a nucleus, and that's something that Utah State has with those two players. And Sam Merrill, in 2 years from now, the kid's only a sophomore, is going to be one of the best players in this conference. For Vegas tournaments went on this past week and a half. Four bids to the NCAA tournament. It was an awesome week in Las Vegas. I watched a bunch of basketball. And, again, got a chance on Tuesday to talk with Mark Few. After we get back from the break, you're going to hear from Emily Van Buskirk, who is with the sportsfanjournal.com. It's awesome. She is the lead college football and basketball writer. You want to talk about somebody that knows college football and basketball? Emily knows it as good as anybody I know. It's going to be awesome talking to her. And also down the road in a minute, we've got the Golden Knights. But right on the other side is Mark Few. You'll get to hear a couple questions. I talked to him right after they beat BYU to win the West Coast Conference Tournament.
Coach, just wanted to ask you again, tonight you win this game. Is it better, do you think, to win by a larger margin when you're getting ready for the tournament?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you can play the way we played, yeah. I mean, it develops all sorts of confidence. I think it gives us something to draw off of as we move forward, as I told them in the locker room. I mean, it was that the whole run started defensively, and if we can play, you know, that stifling and together on the defensive end and spirited like that, I mean, that's a really, really good sign for us. And then obviously they were able to experience the ball movement, the pace, the sharing, the multiple touches on the offensive end. And when you combine those together, I mean, you get a run like that against a quality opponent. So, no. I mean, we just need to bottle it up and keep playing the way we're playing.
Last thing I got to ask you is about the defense. You talked about that. The defensive philosophy, it was suffocating tonight. That kind of defense, if you can get that kind of effort on your team, what is the limit for this team?
I mean, it can go as far. That'll take us as far as we need to go. If we can play with that kind of passion and that together. And there was a big attention to detail. There were some multiple, you know, switches and coverages and things going on because, you know, BYU use a complicated offense especially with Childs and Hawes and Bryant, and so we were doing several different things, and the guys put it all together and, you know, didn't have any paralysis by analysis. They made plays within that framework.
That is an elite college basketball coach, Mark Few, head coach of Gonzaga University. 20 straight years they have made the NCAA tournament. 5 straight years they've won the West Coast Conference. And Emily Van Buskirk, lead college football and basketball writer for the Sports Fan Journal, also co-host of the bi-weekly podcast known as Sideline Sass. Em, it's been a little bit. What's going on?
It has been a while, but I got to say, starting off my segment with a Mark Few quote, I don't know. You know, I'm a WCC alum, but I just spoke very, very loudly about this on Twitter. The Gonzaga playing in the WCC is like bowling with bumpers, man. Real bowling is scary for sure, but at some point, you got to take the training wheels off and join a real league.
You know, they're talking about coming aboard the Mountain West. I don't know if that's joining a real league or not quite yet. But what I will tell you about Mark Few and what I saw and what I watched that tournament, I was down there at the Orleans and watched them play 3 times. Let me tell you something. Their defense is absolutely stifling. And, you know, watching the conference tournaments this year, Emily, what I am definitely seeing is the oldest adage. Mag said earlier he doesn't like these cliches, but defense wins championships. And I will tell you right now, this Gonzaga team, with that defense and how active they are on both ends of the floor and their conditioning, would you be shocked if they are tearing down the nets in San Antonio in about a month and a week from right now?
I don't know if I'd be shocked, I guess. I have seen them play live many times, and they're very, very good. And Mark Few, don't get me wrong, he's one of my favorite coaches, but I just think that they're at this crazy advantage playing in a league like that because they're not getting torn up every night, every week by solid teams. Yes, they have to play St. Mary's, but we all know how I feel about St. Mary's. And I just think it's not a good measuring stick of what they could be. Plus, they come into the tournament, you know, not as beat up as a team like, I don't know, Kansas, but to play a huge amount of talent, you know, just to get to win their conference tournament. So it's yes, they're good, and yes, they could win, but I think it's a little bit unfair, to be honest.
Well, I don't know how unfair it is. I think Mark Few has done a tremendous job. I don't blame him for staying at Gonzaga, staying in the West Coast Conference. He's one of the top nine or eight or nine paid coaches in the country, and what a job he has. They're going to erect statues of this guy in Spokane when he retires. Why leave? But listen, hey, your article said, the one I most recently read, we're going to talk about quick conferences. We'll fly through this because we don't have a great deal of time, but the Big East. The article said, if Xavier and or Villanova don't make the title game, who will? Villanova did, but like the only team your article didn't mention was Providence and the Friars. I mean, how sick good your article didn't talk about Kyron Cartwright could be, and they played three straight overtime games in the Big East tournament. They were pretty damn impressive. Almost Mags, and if you got this, the almost as impressive as Ed Cooley blowing out his pants in the championship game, right? Didn't he?
Yeah, when I sat down, I felt the great breeze and the crack, you know.
Yeah, that was Ed Cooley, man. He felt a little breeze in the crack, but Providence didn't crack till overtime in that game, in the championship game. Kudos to them. You didn't see that one coming, did you?
Absolutely not, but I will say this to save some face. That article was written by myself and my coworker at the Sports and Journal, Josh Nasso, who is a phenomenal basketball mind, and he actually did the Big East part because he covers Villanova, regularly. So I'm not going to say it wasn't my fault, but, he may have missed the boat on that one a little bit.
All right, well, Villanova wins their third Big East title in 4 years, their fourth straight season with 30 wins. Really impressive. The job Jeff Wright has done there, it can't be overstated. It's incredible, and they're a team that is going to make some noise this year. Hey, your article was almost dead on when we were talking about the ACC and Notre Dame getting healthy and beating Pittsburgh in the first round and Virginia Tech to get to the quarterfinals, but Duke was too tall of an order.
Yeah, absolutely. That was actually one of my favorite tournaments to watch, just because the level of competition. I mean, everyone would talk about Grayson Allen and how he's, a dirty player, but just the level that those kids are competing at on all those teams in the ACC, it really gets you pumped up for March Madness, because they're playing, all out, like there's no tomorrow. And that was one of my favorite things to watch. And that championship game was so much fun.
Lights out, and Virginia 31-2, won the regular season, and now the tournament champs. Only three teams in history have won the regular season, the tournament championship, and the NCAA tournament, and ironically, all three of them are Tobacco Road teams from the ACC. But is this finally the year that Tony Bennett, who in my opinion is one of the elite coaches in college basketball, is this finally the year Tony Bennett breaks through? I mean, you got this guy, Kyle Guy, who is absolutely unbelievable. Devon Hall, fifth-year senior, great offensive player and great perimeter defender, and DeAndre Hunter has star written all over him.
It has to be, It's going to depend. They've got this great, number one overall seed. It's going to depend on the path, and I think if they can get a little bit of a break going through, then we're going to see them, in the championship game making some noise and possibly cutting down the nets. But they're sure fun to watch, and I don't know many teams that could outlast them athletically. So
see, my opinion, they're not fun to watch at all, but they just win. I mean, they win. They're a great defensive team, and they are surprisingly offensive. But I think, will Tony Bennett smile if they win the national championship, you think?
I don't know. I think it's going to take a lot more than that.
Oh, my God. The guy just doesn't smile, but he's a hell of a coach. And, hey, your article said Arizona winning the Pac-12 was the boldest prediction of them all. Emily, you're being facetious, right?
To a degree. I mean, the Pac-12 we've seen this year has been kind of a roller coaster. And Arizona, while they've dealt with a lot of issues recently, they're obviously the most talented, in my opinion, team in the Pac-12. But the thing about that tournament, more so than others, is that you really just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, look at Oregon's little run. No one really expected that to happen. So, yes, I was joking, but at the same time, I absolutely was not, because we couldn't for 100% certainty predict that. But congrats to the Wildcats. Sean Miller sitting there like, little smile on his face doing what he does. So
we could spend a lot of time talking about this Arizona Wildcats team and Sean Miller, but I will say this.
Sure.
The bottom line is they are legit. Okay. Yeah. Aiken is the best damn player in the country. And if he's not picked number one by, I think, the Memphis Grizzlies, they're out of their mind. This guy is a game changer and going to be the next superstar in the NBA. And don't take Trier for granted for a minute. If he's not using something to help his performance, he's still a hell of a player. The big question is going to be Sean Miller. How is this guy not lying? We'll talk about that on another show in the future, but it's either the FBI's lying or Sean Miller's lying, and we're all left to be the judges right now. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to plead the fifth right now. Listen, we're almost out of time, man. The Big 12, Kansas, you said you said they're not invincible. I don't think they're invincible either, but they're sure looking damn good, and Devontae Graham is a stud leader. Bill Self should be the Big 12 coach of the year. And finally, the SEC, who's going to win the SEC? Is it going to be Kentucky or Tennessee?
I'm going to go with Kentucky just based off experience and how they've been playing lately. They've been really cohesive, and they're just so athletic and scary. So I'm going to go with Kentucky. I'm bummed because I liked Alabama to get to the final there, so I'm really bummed not to see them and Colin Sexton there. But, you know, I guess I'll swallow my pride and root for Kentucky at this point.
All right. Hey, listen, we're out of time. Emily Van Buskirk, lead college football and basketball writer for the Sport Fan Journal, and also she is co-host of the weekly podcast Sideline Sass. Em, always appreciated. We will talk to you throughout the course of the tournament, and we'll get some predictions next week.
All right, sounds good.
Hey, we're out of time, man. What a so much to cover, never enough time. Golden Knights back in action tomorrow. They finally return to T-Mobile Arena after a five-game homestand Wednesday. We'll be there Friday night with Facebook Live. And big league weekend, Cashman Field, the Chicago Cubs and Chris Bryant and the Cleveland Indians Saturday and Sunday. Definitely be there. We will. We're out of time. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. For Missy Lynn, for Jose, for Magnum, I want to thank Bernie Fred. I want to thank Emily Van Buskirk. I want to thank Mark Few. I want to thank Paul Ware and Shakir Justin. We're back next week. We'll see you.